From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Dr. Shashank Shah. Sri Shashank Shah, a stakeholder management strategist, researcher and a published author, is also a visiting scholar at Harvard Business School. He graduated from the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning in 2006 with gold medals for both MBA and MPhil programs. He later also got his PhD from Bhagwan's hands in the year 2010. As an academically accomplished scholar, he has published over 100 research papers, articles and case studies, and has authored many books, popular among them being Soulful Corporations, Win-Win Corporations and the Tata Group. As a student of Swami's University, he has given many talks in the Divine Presence and was blessed with many interactions with Bhagwan. He describes himself as a Jignasu, someone on a quest for knowledge about both the outer and the inner worlds. This talk, titled The Journey with Sai, The Journey to Sai, was delivered at the Boston Metro Region Sai Center on the 23rd of November 2014 as a part of Bhagwan's 89th birthday celebrations. Stay tuned, dear listeners, after the talk at 3:30 p.m. we have the live Telugu segment Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. With that, over to Sri Shashank Shah.
Offering our loving pranams at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan. I guess Ajay has been very benevolent in his showering of praises on me. I am just a sample amongst thousands of students who have passed out of Swami's University. So I guess that's true of each one of us. And we all are truly what we are because we are his students. So all the credit goes to the master. The theme for today's talk, which I have thought about, is the journey with Sai, the journey to Sai. And what inspired me to take up this particular theme was an incident which Brother Satyajit narrated to us very recently in a talk at the hostel. This was during one of the programs where German devotees were presenting a music program. At the end of that music program, they all shouted out to Swami, "We love you, Swami." And Swami said in reply to that, "Don't love me, love my message." So that struck a chord in me that if we really want to love him, what we need to love is his message. Because time and again Swami has said he is not different from his message. So let's begin on this journey. And this journey is one of great fun and joy because the journey is with Sai. And the journey is one of great fulfillment because the journey is to Sai. And let's see how our Sai has taken us through this journey with him, to him. What do we need to do in order to make this journey enjoyable so that we reach the destination which is he himself? In the fifth verse of the fourth chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, in the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, Krishna tells Arjuna, "Arjuna, you have been with me through so many lifetimes. You are not aware of those, but I know all of them." Similar is the case with all of us who are with Swami. Because it is said that those who choose God are in reality those who have been chosen by God. So each one of us in our own way have been chosen by Swami himself. And this struck me when in one of the interviews in 2006 December, I was sitting along with Bhagwan, a few other students and our Vice Chancellor, former Vice Chancellor then Sri Giri, was mentioning to Swami about our speeches that we were to give in the forthcoming trip to Chennai, the Atirudra Mahayagnam that Swami was going to conduct there, and he had blessed us to accompany him there. So Mr. Giri was sharing with Swami about the speeches that we had given in the recent past. And immediately Swami pointed at me and said, "Yes, I have heard him speak. He spoke during the First World Conference in Mumbai." The First World Conference in Mumbai happened 13 years before I was even born. So that was the first time it struck me in the head that Swami, when Swami says very often that you'll have been with me through many births, that yes, it is true for each one of us till he actually reveals it to us that has been the case. 6 months later, we were in Kodaikanal with Swami. It was May 2007. And we were all surrounded. We were all, Swami was sitting on the chair. We were all sitting around Swami. That evening, prior to that session with Swami, my colleague and I had given a talk in the Sai Shruti Mandir Bhajan Hall. And I had narrated one of the instances of an old devotee called Honamma, a very famous incident narrated by Srimati Geeta Ram very often in her talks. And I had been very inspired by that incident, so I had shared it there. And this dates back to the late 50s, early 60s in Prashantinilayam. And after the speech was over, one of the elders mentioned to Swami, Swami, he narrated this incident of Srimati Honamma very well. Then immediately Swami said, yes, yes, he was there even that time. I had given him chances to speak about this incident again and again so that he may remember the incident and the message associated with that. Back to back, 6 months, twice the reinforcing message from Swami that we have been with us birth after birth. We are not aware of it, but he is very much aware. So he reminds us of this journey and prompts us to continue to the next stage that we are expected to move to. Invariably, this journey starts with what we call as miracles. When if you read the books that we have read across the board, whether it is Howard Buffett, or it is Professor Kasturi, or it is Hislop, you name any devotee, whether from the Western world or the Eastern, the journey with Bhagwan has begun with miracles. And this is true of every avatar, every prophet. The journey begins with a chamatkar, because there is a saying in India, without chamatkar, there is no namaskar. So without seeing the divine aspect of the individual, we are not going to surrender ourselves to him. And so does begin Bhagawan's life itself. The first stage of this journey, which I have called as chamatkar, was where in the first 3 to 4 decades of Swami's life, he had done so many leelas and mahimas, whether it was at Prashantinilayam in his immediate presence, or at distant places in India or even elsewhere in different countries, where he revealed his divinity in many larger than life ways. So let us start today with a few chamatkars, that which established, so to say, the larger than life personality of the avatar that Swami is. And let me start with one of those which I narrated in Swami's presence in 2009 during the Prashanti Vidwan Mahasabha in Prashantinilayam. This was of an incident which happened during the very first Akhand Bhajan. We all celebrated Akhand Bhajan very recently. And the first Akhand Bhajan, if you know, I had the opportunity of interacting with the Seshagiri Rao family. Shri Seshagiri Rao was the first Archaka, the first priest of the Prashantinilayam Mandir. And it's a very interesting story of how he came to Swami. And his family, who have been devotees of Swami for the last 5 generations. And how they first started Akhand Bhajan in Bangalore in the 1940s. And so they had all prayed to Swami that, Swami, we need your blessings to have this Akhand Bhajan in Bangalore. And Swami said, yes, go ahead, my blessings are there, I am also coming. So these devotees were very concerned that Swami is coming, yes, a matter of great joy. But if Swami is coming, we have to make arrangements for Swami to come and participate in the Akhand Bhajan. How are we going to be able to manage it? Because only 7 or 8 families had planned this and they were going to conduct it. Swami came and he said that, yes, there is a venue of this bhajan. So Srimati Ankamma, who was one of the senior devotees of Swami, had decided to give the hall that she had for this particular bhajan. Sri Venkatappa, one of the florist devotees of Bhagwan, had made all the floral arrangements because Swami had come. But what about the food? One of the very senior devotees, Srimati Savitramma, who was there at that time, she had seen Swami as a small boy in Puttaparthi. She was almost like a foster mother to him. She held Swami's hand and said, Swami, we have not made arrangements for food beyond the 8 families who are going to participate in the bhajan. And because you have come, we will have a few 100 people participating. How are we going to arrange for food? And if this food falls short, it is our prestige which is going to be lost. And we are your devotees. So if our prestige is lost, your prestige will be lost. So Swami, and he held Swami's hand, she held Swami's hand and took him to a bag of rice which was there. She said, Swami, you please take a few rice grains and then say Akshayam, which means let the food be ever full. So Swami said, why? She said, so that this food is sufficient for all of those who are gathered for this function. So Swami said, Savitramma, don't worry, Akshayam, Akshayam, Akshayam. Three times Swami said Akshayam and he went ahead. Then Srimati Sundarama met Swami. She was a very great devotee of Swami from the same family. She composed a lot of bhajans of Swami. She and her sister used to compose bhajans on Swami in Telugu and Kannada languages. And Swami told her on the way back, she said, Sundarama, when the Kalpavruksha is here, why are you worried? You do not have to ask the Kalpavruksha for coffee powder. You have to ask the Kalpavruksha for the highest boon of life. Don't worry, food will be sufficient. After Akhandvajans were over, the food was distributed. That food was sufficient for those people who had gathered there. Not only those people, the other excess people who came as a part of the Akhandvajan towards the conclusion, they got the food. Not only them, there was sufficient food to feed the people of that village. Not only that village, it was sufficient to feed the people, 250 people of the neighboring village. And after the Akhandvajan, for hours on end, those women who were part of the kitchen arrangements kept on serving the food to those people. On the way back in the car, Swami mentioned to one of the senior devotees, he said, see, next time, those ladies will never tell me to say Akshayam, because the food is not getting over, and they are going on serving and serving and serving to overcome their fear that the food will get over, I bless them, but now this has become a Frankenstein, it's not getting over. That is how Swami works. We ask for a small requirement, and he gives us things which is beyond our expectation. The next experience, the next miracle I would like to share is of Dr. Suri Bhagavantam. I am taking miracles and experiences of that era because I would like to relate to the Leela and Mahima stages of Swami's life, the first 30 to 40 years of his avataric life. Dr. Suri Bhagavantam was the director of the Indian Institute of Science, Bangalore, one of the foremost academic institutions in the country, started by Jamshedji Tata, one of the founder of the Tata Group, inspired by Swami Vivekananda during one of the trips which Jamshedji Tata had made on the ship to US in 1893 when he was coming here to address the Parliament of World Religions. And incidentally, yesterday, the 10th Vice Chancellor of the Sakasa University has taken over, the 9th Vice Chancellor has remitted office. And this gentleman is the director of the Department of Material Sciences from the Indian Institute of Science. So Institute of Science has got a lot of connection with Swami's life. In fact, when Swami used to visit Dr. Bhagavantam there, he used to even have lunch at the house of Sir C.V. Raman, the great Nobel laureate and physicist. So Swami was blessed, Dr. Bhagavantam used to be blessed by Swami on many, many occasions. But how did the journey of Dr. Bhagavantam begin in Swami's larger scheme of things? This was during those occasions when Swami used to bless devotees who had come to the Chitravati sands. And very often Dr. Bhagavantam, who was a new devotee at that time, used to accompany Swami to Chitravati. On later occasions, Swami also used to take him to different places where he would be travelling. The Chitravati sands, once Dr. Bhagavantam, a physicist, was buried, was trying to analyze the different miracles that Swami was doing from the sands of Chitravati river. So you know all the kinds of things that Swami used to remove from the sands of Chitravati. We've heard of hot Mysore Pak coming out of the Chitravati bed without a single particle of sand being stuck to it. We've heard of small cups of Amrita coming out of the banks of Chitravati without a small article of sand stuck to it. So Dr. Bhagavantam was wondering as to which part of Swami's sleeve are these items coming out from. And then Swami was also giving a discourse parallelly, sharing with the people. He said, Bhagavantam, you know, the mind of man is like a mad monkey. So Dr. Bhagavantam said, yes. Swami said, not only mad monkey, it's a monkey which has drunk a lot the previous night. And Dr. Bhagavantam said, yes, Swami. And then Swami said, and in this drunk monkey, his tail is bitten by a scorpion. Can you imagine, Bhagavantam? That's the state of the mind. So Dr. Bhagavantam, whose state of mind was just that, was nodding his head. And then while Swami was saying that, he just separated his hands like this, and there appeared a monkey in Swami's hands. And Dr. Bhagavantam was just startled as to from which sleeve of Swami's robe did this monkey come out. And then Swami said, see, Bhagavantam, weren't you thinking, where are these articles coming from? They are coming from the Sai palm. Then Swami said, do you want a small gift from me? He said, yes, yes, Swami. Swami said, you read the Bhagavad Gita a lot, I know. So take here. And saying so, Swami took a handful of grains of sand and then placed it in Dr. Bhagavantam's hand. And even before Dr. Bhagavantam realized, that sand had converted into a copy of the Bhagavad Gita in his own hands. And the rational physicist that he was just turning to see as to who was the printer of that particular edition of the Bhagavad Gita. And Swami said, Bhagavantam, you won't find the name of the printer and publisher there. This has been freshly published for you from the Sai Press. So that's how Swami initiated the journey of all these devotees towards his divinity and towards their own journey of life. The last experience I would like to quote is that of Sri Radha Krishna. Sri Radha Krishna was a great devotee of Swami. His family from Kuppam in Andhra Pradesh is a very well-known family. His daughter Srimati Vijaya Kumari has written the book Anyatha Sharanam Nasti. Most of you all would have read it. If you haven't, please read it, because I believe, and she writes in that book, that Swami did not give her the permission to print that book for a quarter century. Because she said, if you publish this book before I tell you to, people will doubt your sanity, whether you are sane enough to write this book, whether things that have happened that you have mentioned in this book are stories from the Puranas or instances from my own life. So it was only in the 1990s that Srimati Vijaya Kumari was permitted by Swami to publish that book. Why am I talking about the life of Sri Radha Krishna? Very interesting life, the acme of what we expect a chamatkar to do. Sri Radha Krishna and his wife Srimati Radhamma were ardent devotees of Swami. Sri Radha Krishna was a great businessman from the Kuppam region. And Srimati Radhamma had asked Swami, Swami, you please give me a blessing, a boon. So Swami said, what is that? She said, Swami, in my life, the male in my family, my husband's family, the male longevity is short. You have only 60 years, and after that invariably the men of the family pass away. Please bless me that my husband will live beyond 60. The Swami said, definitely, definitely, saying so, he put his hand on her head. The 60th year approached, and Sri Radha Krishna, along with Srimati Radhamma and their family, were in Prashantinam. He was suffering from severe gastric ulcers and lot of complications with health. They were in Prashantinilayam, and Swami had blessed them to stay in the mandir, in the room downstairs, because he was not keeping good health. And his health started deteriorating to an extent that he almost went into a coma. And Srimati Radhamma went and told Swami, Swami, this is what has happened. Swami said, I will come, I will see. One day passed, 2 days passed, the body had started turning blue and stiff, and it had even started stinking, typically of what a dead body emits. So Srimati Radhamma got very, very worried, and the ashram people were requesting her to now take the body away, because Sri Radha Krishna was no longer alive. The third day morning, she went crying to Swami, Swami, you promised me, what is this, I'm waiting. Swami said, I'm coming, why are you worried about what the ashram people say? He came to that room an hour later. Srimati Radhamma and Sri Vijaya Kumari, like the Martha and Mary of the Jesus time, went crying to Swami, praying that Swami, please do something. Swami said, yes, yes, I know, you go out and sit. After half an hour, when the doors opened, that stiff, cold and foul smell emitting body was a living man sitting there, and Sri Radha Krishna was smiling, and Swami said, see Radha Krishna, they are all worried that you have gone, why don't you say something? So he said, I am fine, why are you worried about me? And these ladies were unable to believe their eyes, seeing that the person whom they thought was no more was actually sitting alive there on that cot in Swami's residence in Prashantinilayam. Swami said, get some hot coffee for your husband, he likes coffee a lot. And then when the coffee came, spoon by spoon, Swami fed Sri Radha Krishna that coffee. 7 years later, another incident from his life, and then I will conclude with this part of Swami's life. He was having again problems in 1960. His eyes had some problem, and there was a big well in the compound of his residence. And invariably, he fell into that well. It's a mystery how he fell into that well. But he kept on shouting from there, please help me. Please help me. And his wife and children and all of them ran. Just then, coincidentally at that time, there was a police van which was passing by. The police van and the people therein, the family and the neighbors, all of them somehow managed to bring Sri Radha Krishna out of that well. Now that well was 30 foot deep, but when they looked inside, he was actually standing on that water, not knowing how to come out, but also not sinking. They did not know how this happened, but Sri Radha Krishna said that we have to go up to Swami and express our gratitude to him. When they went to Swami, Swami was standing in the balcony of the Prashantilaya Mandir. He looked at them and he said, Radha Krishna, how much pain I have on my shoulders. Last whole night I was holding you on my shoulders so that you don't sink into the well. I'm glad that you are out of the well now and that you have come here safe with your family. That is when Sri Radha Krishna and his family realized that in the well also there was Swami who was there to protect them from any catastrophe. That is how time and again on different occasions Swami had shown his divinity through his miracles. The devotees had got so used to miracles that Professor Kasturi used to time and again plead to Swami, Swami, today we will go to the bed of Chitravati and see some miracles. It's a full moon night. It is so beautiful. Let us go there. So one Swami said, Kasturi, do you think that I need to go to the Chitravati bed for doing miracles? Then Professor Kasturi said, he thought maybe Swami wants to do some miracles there in the ashram itself. There was a huge mound of sand there. Some construction work was going on. So Swami said, Kasturi said, no, no, Swami, we will do it here. There is sand here also. So then Swami looked at Professor Kasturi and said, Kasturi, do you think I need specific sand for doing some miracles for you? Then Professor Kasturi thought, oh, maybe Swami wants to go to the terrace of the mandir. He said, okay, Swami, we'll go to the terrace for doing miracles. Then Swami got a little irritated. He said, Kasturi, miracles, miracles, miracles. Do you know what is my greatest miracle? And Professor Kasturi realized that now something very important was coming, because when Swami changes his tone from a humorous conversation to a serious one, there is a very important message that is going to come. So Professor Kasturi asked for Swami. Swami said, you Kasturi, you are my greatest miracle. This human body is the greatest miracle of God in creation. And then flowed a few great pearls of wisdom. Swami said, a 2-inch eye can see this entire creation. The skin can feel the sensation all over the body. Today robotics has advanced so much, but we don't have a robot still which has the kind of sensation which the human body has in every square millimeter of its surface. And Swami went on explaining it with different aspects of the human body, whether it's the tongue, the teeth, the eye, the nose, and everything about the human body and how fantastic it is. Yesterday in the convocation address, the chief guest, Dr. Kasturi Rangan Krishna Swami, mentioned that the human brain, which they are now doing research on, has the capacity to store 20 zettabytes of information. 20 zettabytes of information is equivalent to all the information that is available on Facebook and all other social media put together. That much capacity is there in each and every single human mind. Swami said, Kasturi, of course Swami didn't give petabyte and zettabyte kind of jargon. Swami said, Kasturi, you are the greatest miracle. Why don't you understand that? On another occasion, in a discourse to MBA students, Swami was talking about the importance of human body. And Swami said, do you know what the human body is made up of? And I have listed it here from the discourse. Swami said, the human body, the chemical composition of human body consists of 2 inches of iron, lead equal to that present in 6 pencils, 5 Lux soaps, 1 bucket of lime water, phosphorus of the quantity in 900 matchstick heads, and some sulfur. And then Swami asked the boys, if any scientist in this world is given all this material, can he bring out the human body as it is? Swami said, no, that is the miracle of God. The human body is the greatest miracle of God. So we need to move ahead from this journey of miracles to the next journey. How much importance did Swami himself give to miracles? Swami often used to say the miracles of Sai are equivalent to the mosquito on the back of an elephant. How insignificant is that? Yes, brothers and sisters, a mosquito on the back of the elephant, And how Swami used to refer to his miracles? Swami used to say, my miracles are my visiting cards. How often do we distribute visiting cards? We usually quote this, but have we ever analyzed? I used to wonder why Swami used to say that. How often do we give visiting cards to people? To a person, a new person that we meet?
Once.
Do we keep giving visiting card every time we meet him or her? If we do that, the person will doubt our sanity, right? Because you need to get introduced only once, not every time. That is what Swami meant when he said that my miracles are my visiting cards. But unfortunately, we want miracles every month, right? We want miracles in some form or the other. And in his discourse, Swami had said yesterday, this morning in Prashantim, I was seeing the live presentation from there. Swami said in the discourse, your heart has become a musical chair. And if one Swami doesn't give you miracles, you go to the other Swami. And you keep going from Swami to Swami, Swami to Swami. And now very often if we don't find Swamis, we go to mediums who will give us access to Swami. Swami said, what is the use of this kind of musical chair that you are playing in your heart? Heart is a single sofa. And that sofa has to be given to the master. And there is only one master. Do you have two mothers? You have only one mother. And that's what Rama had told Lakshmana. Just because you find another beautiful woman, will you change Kaushalya or Sumitra as your mother? So Rama said, there is only one mother. There is only one motherland. There is only one master. Once you have found the guru, stick to that guru. So that is the purpose of miracles, to establish the understanding of Swami's divinity in our life. And what do these miracles aim at? They aim at instilling in us virtues and values. And thereby we move to the next level of this journey, which is samskar. Swami moved to the next level in his own life. We see from Mahima and Leela, Swami moved to the stage of Upadesh, giving discourses. He started the Bal Vikas and the Sai Spiritual Ethics, Sai Spiritual Education movement in India and other parts of the country. What was the objective of this? The objective of this was to inculcate values. Swami used to say, what is samskar? Samskar is a process of transformation and refinement. We have to give up our animal qualities, we have to sustain our human qualities, and we have to move towards divine qualities. This is the three-pronged mission of human life, as Swami has defined it. Give up the animal, because we all moved through 83,99,999 species. So Swami always used to say, that's why you have the little bit of the dog in you, the little bit of the tiger in you, the little bit of the elephant in you, because you were all in some birth that those animal qualities have to be given up. You have to sustain the human and you have to move to the divine. And how do we do that? We do that by contemplating and practicing Swami's message and value systems in every life, every aspect of our daily life and conduct. A few examples and experiences, very interesting stories, some Swami himself has narrated. And there is an interesting story he once shared in Trai Vrindavan with students. There was a story of this lady who used to go and participate in a particular Ramayana exposition. She used to go and sit there every day for those 7 days in the first row. She used to sit there and while listening to the Ramayana, she used to keep on shedding tears. So this particular person who was giving discourses on the Ramayana was very happy that this lady is so overwhelmed with my speeches on the Ramayana and she is a great devotee. So the end of the 7 days, when the Ramayana was over and the Purnahuti was to happen, the person who was giving discourses on the Ramayana called this lady and gave her the first spoon of the prasad of the Teertham, the holy water. And he told her, mother, your life has been sanctified because you were so involved and engrossed in this Ramayana exposition and you have become one with the story of Rama. So this lady said, what are you talking about? She said, mother, you were here all these 7 days. She said, but I did not understand anything of what you said in your Ramayana. So this man was shocked. Then he said, then why were you sitting in the front row and shedding tears? She said, do you know, in your book of the Ramayana, there was one piece of cloth which you used to put every day while starting the exposition. A same piece of cloth used to be used by my deceased husband on his shoulder. Whenever I saw that piece of cloth, I remembered him. And seeing him, I used to shed tears of separation. It has nothing to do with your Ramayana. So this man was totally shocked as to what he thought and what actually the reason was. Then Swami said, all of you students are like this only. You are all the time interested in seeing Swami and being close to him. But none of you practice what I tell you to practice. That is very, very important. Then Swami said, do you know you have three subjects in your undergraduation? Physics, chemistry, mathematics. This is the example Swami is giving. Swami said, if you get 99 marks in physics, 69 marks in chemistry, and 29 marks in mathematics, will you pass the exam? The student said, no, Swami. He said, why? Said, the student said, Swami, because we have failed in mathematics. We need to pass in all three subjects in order to clear the exam. They were telling the chancellor the examination rules. So Swami said, oh, is it so? He said, yes, Swami. Then Swami said, then in life, you are great in your deeds. You are a superhero. In your words, you are a fantastic speaker. Then Swami said, but in thoughts, you all don't pass the exam very so often. Then how do you think will you pass the exam of life? Swami said, just like you need to get pass marks in physics, chemistry and mathematics to succeed in examination, in the examination of life, Swami expects you to get pass marks, or rather shining marks, in your thought, word and deed. It is then that you are near to God, but you also become dear to God. Then Swami was sharing about how we do our daily worship. We all, most of us, especially in India from my experience, have a small puja room in our houses and we sit there every day morning and we do puja, different forms of puja, some do the ashtotram, some do sahasranam and so many different ways. But while we are doing the puja, Swami said, invariably there is a parallel processing going on. The mother-in-law will be shouting to the daughter-in-law, see whether the dhobi has come or not. Then she will start her puja again. After some time, have you given the clothes for ironing? Then she will continue with some more puja. Oh, have you made the breakfast ready for the children? Swami said, what is the use of doing this kind of puja when your body is there? You are chanting mantras, but your mind is with the dhobi, the washerman, the man who is doing ironing, the person who is going to make the breakfast. Swami said, what is the use of doing these kinds of rituals? You have to have 100% concentration in thought, word and deed, in your work for which God is giving you full time. Swami said, that is samskar. You have to perpetuate this in every part of your life, not only in the puja room. And then Swami had given an example of a young man in 1973 during the summer courses. Swami had given this very wonderful example. Swami said, there was this, you must listen to this discourse. This is from the 1970 summer course when Swami had given discourses on the Bhajagovindam. Swami mentioned about a particular young man who used to come to Swami for his blessings very often. So first this man used to come to Swami for receiving his blessings for passing in the examination. So he used to get an interview and Swami used to say that he used to pray to Swami, Swami, I want to pass in the examination, please bless me. Swami said, yes, you work hard, if you do well with your studies, you will definitely pass in the examination. His examinations came, he fared well and he passed the exam. He came back to Swami, said, Swami, I have passed the exam. Now you must bless me that I get a good job. Swami said, yes, definitely, you put in your efforts, I will also bless you that you get a good job. He got a good job. And then he started going regularly to office. Then Swami said, there in the job, he found a girl whom he liked. And then he came to Swami and said, Swami, Swami asked him, how is your job going on? He said, Swami, job is going on well, but I have also found a girl for myself. And this is slowly Swami is narrating. And then Swami said, oh, is it so? But then I want you to have your parents' approval before you get married. So this boy said, Swami, I don't care what my parents say. I want to get married. Otherwise, I will commit suicide. So then Swami said, okay, don't talk like that. I give you my blessings, you get married, no problem. And he got married. Swami called his parents, blessed him, and he got married. A couple of years later, he came back and he said, Swami, now you must bless me that I have children. So Swami said, yes, by God's grace, you will have children, don't worry. He came back a year or two later and he had got a child and came for blessings of Swami. A couple of years later, he was stagnating in his job. So he came back and said, Swami, now you must bless me that I get promotion in my job. So Swami said, yes, yes, you put your best efforts, you will get promotion in your job. Then this man did come after 4 or 5 years. Swami said, it seems in those 4 or 5 years, while he got promotion in his office, he also got a lot of promotion at home and had 3 or 4 kids. And the house was filled with kids. The wife ended up giving up her job and this man was earning single-handedly and was finding it very difficult to maintain his daily requirements. So 6 years later, he came back to Swami and he said, Swami, what have you put me into? He said, Swami, I am not able to manage the family. You have given me 4 children. You have given me, my wife is no longer earning. I am no longer able to sustain all this. The snake called life has bitten me, Swami. I want now to serve in your family, in your ashram. I don't want all this. So Swami said, see how conveniently human beings ascribe their own desires and wishes to God's grace and then blame God for the situation they have themselves put into. Swami said, this is what happens very often to the monkeys as well. And then Swami gave the example. Swami said, do you know in India there is a very famous way of catching monkeys? You know how they catch monkeys? They take a big pot with a small narrow opening on the top. In that pot, they put a lot of peanuts, groundnuts, because monkeys are very fond of that. Invariably, the monkey puts his hand inside and catches hold of the peanuts. When he catches hold of the peanuts, he is not able to put his hand outside the pot because obviously his hand has grown bigger, the pot's opening is very small, so his hand has got stuck. And he thinks that there is something inside that pot which has caught hold of him. Swami said, that is the way we are all doing things. Swami said, you catch hold of the world and its multiparous desires. You don't want to leave them because you want to hold on to those peanuts in the pot. And then you blame God that God has put you through all these difficulties. Swami said, it is very easy. Give up those peanuts and remove your hand from the pot. So simple, isn't it? But we do not want to practice. We want to follow what we have always been doing and we want others also to do that. And then my dear students, I have put together all these stories from different sources because I thought I would like to share them about how Swami used to teach us these various facets of daily life which we need to improve upon. The story is there in the compilation My Dear Students Volume 1. So Swami said there was a big Ganesha temple and in that Ganesha temple, a devotee used to worship. We have the habit whenever we go to any temple, especially where we can touch every part of the body of the deity, we put our hands on every part of the body. So this devotee used to put his hand in the navel of Ganesha and worship from there also. One day when he was putting his hand in the navel of Ganesha, there was a scorpion hiding there. And Swami said that scorpion bit that man so hard, but there were so many people standing behind him. So he, instead of making everybody feel that, oh, he has actually been bitten by the scorpion, he said, wow, there is bliss in the navel of Ganesha. And he was extolling that great experience which he got by putting his finger in the navel of Ganesha. So, seeing that the person before him has got bliss from putting his finger in the navel, all the people standing behind started putting their finger in the navel of Ganesha to experience that bliss. All of those people were subsequently bitten by that scorpion who was having a great time sitting in the navel there. But none of them told the next man, be careful, there is a scorpion inside which will bite you. Swami said, see, all of you are like this. You all go through the hardships of life. You all don't learn the lessons when you are supposed to learn. Not only now you don't learn, you don't even pass it on to the next generation. You don't warn your children as to what is right and what is wrong about your daily life and how you should lead it. You must tell them from your own experience what they should be doing or what they should not be doing. That is samskara. Otherwise, how will they understand it? They will have to reinvent the wheel again and again. That is the samskara which the parents have to inculcate in children, Swami said. But all this seems so difficult, isn't it? Swami was telling in one of the summer course discourses in 1990. Swami said, there was this man, he was staying in a neighborhood with another person who had a cock in his house. And that cock used to crow in the morning, obviously. That is what the cock will do, it will crow in the morning. So this man, after a couple of weeks, went to that neighbor and told him that I am not getting sleep at night. So this neighbor said, why, what happened, sir? He said, I am not getting sleep because I am disturbed by the cock in your house. He said, that cock stays in my house. I am not getting disturbed by the cock. Why are you getting disturbed? He said, no, I am getting disturbed at night. So this man said, but he doesn't crow in the night. He crows only in the morning. So this person said, exactly. I wait the whole night thinking, now the cock will crow. And whole night I don't get sleep waiting for the cock to crow. Swami said, see, this is the way the mind keeps playing a lot of tricks on you. You expect that things will happen your way and you keep anticipating it that way. That is not the way that things would happen. You have to have that faith in God and practice His message in your life. Once one of our teachers had asked Swami, Swami, all this is very difficult. We are all laughing currently over our follies. It is also very difficult to practice it, isn't it? Swami said, yes, yes, it is difficult, no doubt. Swami said, do you know when you were a small child, this was in the interview room, one of the MBA group interviews that Swami had given. Do you know when you were a small child, how much time it had taken for you to learn walking? So this teacher said, Swami, at least one to one and a half years. Swami said, yes, 1.5 years. You used to walk slowly, you used to fall, your mother used to hold your hand, she used to keep moving a little behind saying, come, and you used to pick up that art of walking. Today walking is so commonplace for you, isn't it? He said, yes, Swami. Swami said, then you are aspiring for the highest thing in your life. You are aspiring for God's grace itself. How do you think that the highest aspiration in life will be achieved without practice? Swami said, abhyasam, practice is most essential. Swami said, for everything in life, you have to practice. Reading is through practice. Writing is through practice. Talking is through practice. Singing is through practice. Swami said, every aspect of your life is only through practice. Similarly, in your journey with Swami, you have to practice what Swami has told you. Only then you will achieve the highest. Every activity, Swami used to say, has to be for our own transformation. We do not get jewels which adorn our necks so easily. It is got from the mind where the gold is an unpurified form. It goes through so much of transformation process to adorn our necks that we so lovingly wear, right? The sugar that we have goes through so many stages because it has to be converted from sugar cane to those fine sugar crystals. Similarly, Swami said, man has to be unmade and remade into the image of God, and that process will be achieved only through practice. And then Swami used to quote this very famous experience from the Prashna Upanishad, where Sage Pipilada gives the example of a farmer who is fed up of his journey of life, and he's sitting crying there, complaining what a difficult life he has to lead. And there next to him, a small pot of mud starts speaking to him. And he tells the farmer, oh farmer, do you know how I began that journey of mine? I was mud on the ground. I was taken from there and made into a ball with water. After that, I had to go through so much of process in order to become this mud. I was heated in the kiln and so many things happened. Finally, today, I adorn your head as a pot of mud which carries water. Similarly, is your journey. You have to go through all these difficulties in order to attain that perfection. Every activity should be for our self-transformation. We presume that when we offer food to Swami, we offer flowers to Swami, we offer leaves and different pieces of decoration to Swami, we have done our job. Swami used to often tell students, don't think your job ends with giving me leaves and flowers and fruits and water. Swami said, I want the leaf of your body. I want the flower of your heart. I want the fruit of your mind. And I want the water of the tears of bliss from your eyes. That is the true offering that I want from you. Then we realize that that God is working through us, because that is the only thing we can offer him. The flowers and the fruits and the leaves are available in the market. That which belongs to us are these things which we have to offer to God. Then we move to the next stage, from samskar to paropkar, the attitude of service, selfless service. Swami too moved to this stage in the next stage of his life. We see the establishment of trusts which Swami started for public service. We see the establishment of hospitals. We see the establishment of so many water projects, so many service activities across the globe with the sole objective of service. The avatar had moved to the next stage of his avataric sojourn of paropkar, of highlighting the ideal of selfless service. Why should we do service? We all know that. What is the purpose of doing service? But just to expound on very dear words of Swami, which Swami has quoted very often, even the commencement of the WhatsApp Web project in 1995, Swami had said this, paropakaraya phalanti vruksha. It is for the sake of service for others that the trees bear fruits. Paropakaraya vahanti natyaha. It is for the sake of others that rivers give water. Paropakaraya duhanti gavaha. It is for the sake of others that cows give milk. Paropakarartham idam shariram. It is for the sake of others that this human body has been given. And not only did Swami say that, he put it as a mission statement in his super speciality hospitals. When we go to the Prashantiniam super speciality hospital, in the idol of Lord Ganesha at the center, in the sanctum sanctorum of the main prayer hall, there is a mission statement of Swami's hospitals. And that state, paropakarartham idam shariram. To be of service to others is the only purpose for which this human body has been given. And then Swami always used to say, why do you think I highlight on the nature of service for man? Because to serve is man's nature. Just like to be sweet is the nature of sugar, to be cool is the nature of water, and to give warmth is the nature of fire. To serve is the nature of human life. And then Swami used to very often say, and we remember this quote, but we very rarely ventured into it. Once I ventured to analyze it, and this is what I understood. And Swami used to say, the proper study of mankind is man. Right? Very often Swami used to say that, the proper study of mankind is man. What does it mean? If we want to really study how mankind should function, we must study how man functions. Then only we will be able to realize what is the ideal for mankind to follow. And then Swami used to say, do you know, when the thorn pricks the sole of the foot, what happens? Swami said, first the eyes start shedding tears. Are the eyes related to the foot? No. Then what happens? The mind tells the hand that there is a thorn in the foot. Does the hand say that the thorn is in the foot, not in my hand, in myself? So why should I remove it? The hand goes to the foot, removes the thorn, and then the eye stops shedding tears. Swami said, see how uniformly the different parts of the body work in unison. This is what the proper study of mankind is man means. Just as how a human body works in unison, in perfect oneness, that is how mankind should work. Every part of you, of society, should be working towards the welfare of the other part of society, because the others are not others. The others are God himself in that form. Swami said, when the tongue takes in food, whenever it is sweet, it goes, it lets it go inside. Whenever it is bitter, it spits it out. Right? I have gone through that bitterness. Let not the other parts of the body suffer the same bitterness. It spits out the bitter food. That is the duty of the tongue. The stomach receives all the food, but the blood is given to all parts of the body so that they function effectively. Swami said, see, this is how society has to function. That is why service is the very basis of how a society should be functioning. And in every avatar, we have seen this ideal of service so lovingly displayed, whether it is Rama, whether it is Krishna, whether it is prophets Muhammad and Jesus, or Buddha and Mahavira, we have seen this ideal of selfless service being displayed. Once in Kodaikanal, we were all, some of our students were there, that was in 99, I had not yet joined them. After the Ishwarama Day celebrations, Swami went around in the car, loading a full set of blankets therein. He went to different parts of Kodaikanal. People thought Swami is going for sightseeing, then why is he taking these blankets? But when they realized that at every nook and corner, wherever Swami saw old people, he stopped the car, asked the boys to take the blanket from the trunk and go and give it to that poor man or poor lady there. When Swami came back to the Sai Shruti Mandir, there was so much of joy on Swami's face. Swami said, I am so happy today. You must be wondering why I went all over the village distributing blankets. It is because those people who really deserve those blankets could not come all the way to the Sai Shruti Mandir. That is why I went all the way there to distribute the blankets, so that in the cold weather of Kodaikanal, they have the much needed warmth which will keep them healthy. On another occasion, when there was an earthquake in Gujarat, lots and lots of items were sent to those people there. And people said, Swami, you are doing such a nice work. This is one of the great works that any social service organization has done. Swami said, I am not doing any great work. Swami said, this is my duty. Not only my duty, this is even your duty. And I am setting an example so that you may follow my example. On another occasion, there was a Narayan Seva conducted in Prashanti Nilayam. A lot of people told Swami, Swami, this is the largest Narayan Seva conducted in Prashanti Nilayam in recent times. Why don't we give a small advertisement in the newspaper? So Swami had a twinkle in his eyes and he said, when your relatives come home for food, do you give advertisements in your family to the newspaper saying that my relatives have come home, I just gave them a sumptuous meal? So the devotee had a very confused look on his face. Swami said, do you do that? He said, no, Swami. Swami said, all these people coming to my place from different villages, thousands of them, are all my family. They are part of my large family. And when I give food to my own family members, I don't need to give any advertisements in the newspaper. That is the ideal of service Swami had time and again shown in his life. In a message to the Hyderabad youth in the interview room, Swami had asked them, what kind of service activities you all do? Swami, we do Narayan Seva, we go village to village doing cleaning of villages, health and hygiene, this, that and the other. And Swami was very happy. Swami said, wow, you all are doing wonderful work. He listened to all the statistics that they rolled out. And at the end of that particular interview, Swami said, okay, you told me about all the things that you do. Now tell me, after doing this service, have you been able to control your anger? Have you been able to have more brotherhood between each one of you? Have you been able to love your neighbor, your colleague, your friend, your senior in the organization better? Swami said, if that has been achieved by your service, then the real purpose of service is achieved. Swami said, I can anyway do all these service activities myself. I don't need you to go to these villages. I am already present in those villages, as you all have experienced and have narrated the miracles in those villages. I am there even before you have gone there. I am giving you this opportunity to go there so that you may better yourself through this service. That is the purpose why I want you to service. There was once an occasion in the life of Shirdi Sai Baba when a particular merchant had called Shirdi Sai Baba to his place for food. We know that incident. Very famous incident. So Shirdi Baba did not go to that merchant's place. And that merchant came back at night and said, Baba, I was waiting for you all through the day with food, but you did not fulfill your promise. Swami said, I came to your house, but you did not give me food. Instead of giving me food, you gave me beatings. He said, no, Baba. Then Shirdi Baba lifted a part of his robe and said, see, and there were marks of beatings on Shirdi Baba's forearm. And then Baba said, when that dog came to your house for having food, instead of feeding the dog with food, you beat away the dog, saying, go away from here. Shirdi Baba said, I am in that dog also. You have to see me in every being that you serve. It is only then that the purpose of service is achieved. Swami said, serve, serve, serve till you see God in everyone. That is when the objective of service is achieved. Because it is the same God in every part of this creation. We have to use the means of service to achieve that particular realization. And we thought that all through his life, Swami would go on giving the message of service, go on doing projects one after the other, and will become the largest social service organization with the maximum number of service projects in the world. But that did not happen, and that has not happened, because Swami, in the last decade of his life, moved to the last part of his mission, the last 10 years, when he kept on repeating the message of Advaita. He kept on saying, I and you are one. I am I. There is no difference between you and me. I am not the body. I am the principal resident in the body. We hear these sentences being resonated in Swami's discourses time and again, all through the last 10 years of his life. Because that is the stage where Swami wanted to take us collectively as his devotees, to the stage of Sakshatkar, to the stage of realization that we are not different from Bhagwan. We are all parts of the great cosmic principle that we are. Very often, it is said in the Sanskrit verses, Papoham, Papakarmoham, Papatma, Papasambhava. Whenever we do Shuddhi, we say that. Swami used to get very angry at Padmanabhan, who was the priest of the Prashantam Ashram. I just take 5-7 minutes more, I'm on my way to completion. Padmanabha Shastri was the priest in the Prashantalim Bhajan Hall, and he used to chant this mantra while he was doing the Shuddhi, when he was doing the rituals in the morning. Then one fine day Swami went to him and he said, what do you mean Papoham, Papakarmoham? I am born out of sin, I am sinful, I am living in sin. Swami said, no, no, no. Praptoham, Praptakarmoham, Praptatma, Praptasambhava. I am born out of divinity, I am living in divinity, I am journeying towards divinity. That is the essence of life. That is the essence of the Vedas. Do not rebel in sin, because you are not sinners. You are the children of immortality. Swami said, you are not human beings achieving a spiritual destiny. You are spiritual beings leading a human destiny. That is the difference between our understanding and the ideal that Swami wants all of us to practice. This is the essence of the message of every great saint, prophet and avatar. We see great saints of all regions and religions going to the same message. Whether it is Narasimha Mehta of Gujarat, in his poems of the last few years of his life, he used to only extol Advaita. Whether it is Tyagaraja, and whether it is Annamacharya, all of them went to this message of oneness, of humanity, and humanity being aspect of divinity. We always presume, and I like to highlight this, because Swami always used to share this, that we are the body. Why are we talking these things on the birthday? But I guess it's very important for us to remember that it's not the birthday today. Of course it is, physically. But it is birthday every day when we move ahead on the path which Swami wants us to move ahead. Swami said, you always think that you are the body. But when a person is no longer alive, what do? They take the body away. Right? You say, take the body away. So-and-so's body is lying here. Then where is that so-and-so? Right? If that so-and-so was that body, why do you say take his body away? You don't take so-and-so away. So-and-so will be buried. So-and-so will be cremated. So-and-so's body will be buried. So-and-so's body will be cremated. Swami said, do you know why the language is formulated that way? Because even the language knows that the person is not the body. The person was staying in the body. And that body is now inert. And the person has moved away. And who is that person? That person is the Atman. And yesterday in the discourse Swami said, Mamaivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had said, it is a part of my eternal being which is present in each and every one of you. Swami said in the Purush Suktam, it is said, Sahasra Shirsha Purusha, Sahasra Aksha Sahasrapa. God has 1,000 heads, 1,000 hands, 1,000 legs. Swami said, can you imagine a God of that kind having 1,000 heads and 1,000 hands? Swami said, this is symbolic. The population when the Vedas were put into written form was a few thousands. So it was Sahasra Shirsha Purusha. Now there are crores, millions. So it should be Koti Shirsha Purusha. Right? The cosmic being has crores of hands and crores of legs. And what are those? Those are we. In the Narayan Suktam it is said that between the 9th and 12th vertebrae, there is a blue flame
నీలతో యద మధ్యస్థా విద్యుల్లేఖేవ భాస్వర నీవార శూకవత్ తన్వి పీతా భాస్వత్యనుపమ తస్యా ఆ శిఖాయ మధ్యే పరమాత్మా వ్యవస్థితః. Between the 9th and 12th vertebrae of our spinal column, there is a blue flame which is constantly shining, and it is that which is divinity itself. It is the Paramatma Tattva which is present in each one of us. That blue flame in you, that blue flame in me is the same. There is no difference, because that flame has come with the from the supreme flame. Swami said, you have a silver glass here, you have a silver plate, you have a silver spoon. Spoon, plate, glass, everything is different. Silver is the same, isn't it? Similarly, you may be an American, you may be a German, you may be an Indian, you may be an African. These are all external appearances. The blue flame, the Atma Tattva, in each one of us is the same. Last two things which I wanted to share. So how is it that we can practice this in our daily life? What is it that we need to do in order to achieve this stage or progress to this final stage of sakshatkara or realization that the divinity is within us? Swami has said once in the discourse in 2008, you all are all doing akhand bhajans 24 hours a day, and then you all think that, oh, we did akhand bhajan 24 hours. Swami said, what about the other 364 days? Do you do bhajan even 1 hour a day on those days? Swami said, akhand bhajan means that which goes on continuously, breath after breath, from the womb to the tomb. And Swami said, that is actually going on. There is a ready-made mechanism in you which is doing that. 21,600 times a day you are breathing. And that breath is telling you that you are divine, you are divine, you are divine. But you are looking for that message in the outside world. Swami said, do you know once Vishnu and Lakshmi were having a conversation, and Lakshmi told Vishnu, you have given man everything. Now how will he pray for you? He will not need you anymore. So Vishnu told Lakshmi, do you think I have less brains? Swami's story. So Lakshmi said, no master, then why did you do this? Vishnu said, I have given man everything that he wants, but the atome of the world, which is me himself, I have hidden myself in his heart. And I will not make myself available to him till he looks inside. Just like the musk deer who searches for that fragrance all outside, but has the musk very much in his belly. So Swami used to say, we all come for bhajans, for Nagar Sankirtan, for Seva organization activities on Thursdays and Sundays. This applies to me also. I'm not trying to pontificate from the podium. I'm only sharing my thoughts which have really moved me from Swami's message. Swami said, you all participate in the organization activities. But Swami said, devotion is not a part-time duty. Swami said, part-time duty, part-time results. Swami said, which job will give you full salary for half work? Full work, full salary. Half work, half salary. Right? You cannot be a shareholder with God. Swami said, today's relationship has become a shareholder company relation. These are Swami's words. You are investing in God by doing some things, and just like the company gives dividends at the end of that year, you expect God to give you dividends in terms of His grace. Swami said, no, no, this relationship doesn't work with God. You have to give fully. You have to participate fully, not only in the organization activities. In everything that you do, it has to be for Swami and Swami alone. That is when you will be able to realize that it is He who is working through you. And that is the purpose of the Satasai organizations. Swami is not a part of the Satasai organization. The Satasai organization is a part of Swami. So the Satasai organization activities are one part of our relationship with Swami, and the rest of the relationship with Swami has to be cultivated day in and day out. Last part of the talk, I'm sorry for the 2 minutes extra. Once Dr. Hislop was talking to Swami, and he said, Swami, you have told us so many things. What is the purpose of the avatar then? Why have you come down? All these things were told time and again by different scriptures, and different stories have been narrated by different prophets. What is the role of the avatar then descending on earth? And Swami said, do you know the story of the lamb and the lion? He said, no Swami. You all know the story of the lamb and the lion. The lamb, when there was one lion cub who had strayed away into the group of sheep, right? And it started thinking that it is the sheep itself. unless one fine day a real lion found that sheep lion and took it to a pond, and it showed the reflection of the sheep lion in the pond and the reflection of the male lion in the pond, and told, "See, you are like me. Why are you bleating? You should roar, because to roar is your nature. You have been misled into the fact that you are a sheep. You are not a sheep, you are a lion." Swami said, that is the job of the avatar, to take mankind to the mirror of reality and show that you and I are one. You are deluded into the fact that you are a human being with a mundane existence. I have come to roar like the cosmic lion to show you that you are verily an embodiment of my supreme divinity. You are not a mundane human being. That is the purpose for which I have come. That is the purpose for which this incarnation took place. That is the purpose for which we celebrate His glory, His majesty, His grandeur. And I guess that is the purpose with which we must remind ourselves every single day that this journey has to move on from chamatkar to samskar, from samskar to parokkar, from parokkar to sakshatkar, to translate it from miracles to cultivation of values and virtues, from that to selfless service, from that to the journey of realizing that the same Swami exists in all of us, and we have come to realize that, to move back to Him, so that we don't have to keep coming again and again. Thank you so much for your patient listening.
Mahesvara Shiva, Mahesvara Shiva. Oh no. Namah Shivaya.
Jai Jai.